Loveless Oregon is a short story collection by Elliot Mattson about death, rebirth, prosperity, and its pitfalls. Each story takes place in the same building in the same town across many years. The stories feature disparate characters in different situations, linked by their geography and imposing omnipresent supernatural forces. All stories were written, narrated, recorded, and produced by me, Elliot Mattson. If you want to learn more about the collection, go to elliotmattson.com/loveless. But for now, sit back and enjoy the story. Welcome to Loveless.
Oh, it's all at the Oregon coast. Well, the mighty Mississippi don't know what it's missing in.
Loveless, Oregon, story number one. Love Me Like That.
I see you everywhere you go, but you're always hitched to him. On Main Street, at the drive-in, at the Nickelodeon. You're always making kissy faces, and I don't know why. Give him love so tenderly, and he barely bats an eye. I'd tell you what I'd do, babe, if only you were mine. I'd sweep you off your feet each day and sing you lullabies. I could be here for you, I could be here for you. I'd tell you what I could do, I'd tell you what I could do. I could love you like this, if you love me like that. Deal with him, so don't go disappearing where I won't find you again. And even if you're spoken for, I'll make you see me true. Even if your mind's made up, well, what have you got to lose? I'll tell you what I'd do, babe, if only you were mine. I'd sweep you off your feet each day and sing you lullabies. I could be here for you, I could be here for you. I'll tell you what I could do, I'll tell you what I could do. I could love you like this, if you love me like that. If you love me like that.
I think we got it.
Oh, in closing out the set, that was Tex Bartlett with his number one hit, Love Me Like That. You know, to be honest, that one's starting to feel more like an oldie at this point. But in the meantime, at the top of the hour here, we've got some new Elvis for you, as well as everybody's favorite lads from Liverpool with some tracks off of A Hard Day's Night. You're listening to KBDN, all the hits of today.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to...
Vehement car tires spit street water across his Levi's. His guitar case leans against the rock wall of Highway 101 like a beaten boxer sweating in his corner before the next round. The last round. "So, what are they saying?" says Keith. His drawl gets more pronounced when he's tired or angry. The payphone is caked in ocean salt and bird shit.
"Well, they're not quite happy with it yet."
His manager's voice comes through remorseless and static. Waylon's no doubt comfortable wherever he is. "What's wrong with it?"
"There's nothing wrong."
Is he eating a salad right now? Right into the receiver?
"They love the song. They really do. They just want more. That's all. The Tourism Bureau got a bunch of these coastal town representatives together, and they are just fixing for some more town mentions, the sights, the sounds, the history. You know, all that jazz."
"It's folk."
"You know what I mean. They like Roland Columbia. Can you blame them? They want the next generation of that. Like what Woody did for Oregon, but for the coast specifically."
Waylon clicks his tongue as another car speeds by and sprays Keith. And now it's raining to top it off. Raining and dreary in June. Who chooses to live here?
"Maybe you could mention some more towns by name." People love that. Have you heard Viva Las Vegas yet? I'd say Elvis has still got it. But, you know, so do you. Where are you at right now?
Keith leans out of the metal payphone frame and squints through the mist at the tired, gray ocean. He looks the other way across the road at a row of battered buildings. The one directly in front of him is the music venue. Waylon did call it a venue when he booked Keith. He'll be singing acoustic ditties to cobwebs and a few drunks eating greasy fries. The large rectangular window frames him perfectly. It creates a battered wooden cage for his reflection, his soul. The window gets smaller and smaller as he looks at himself, looking at himself.
You there, Keith? I asked where you are right now.
Loveless. Loveless, Oregon. Keith can't believe the words as he admits them. Lord almighty, how depressing is that?
Hey, if it works, it works.
I just don't want to do this, Waylon.
Well, you agreed to it, Tex. What do you want me to do?
Stop calling me that damn name, for starters. I got a number one hit and a platinum record. I want to be Keith Bartlett now. How many times I gotta say I'm from Oklahoma?
Nobody gives two shits about Oklahoma, Keith.
Isn't Waylon from someplace close by? Missouri or Arkansas? He tries to hide his accent with Tinseltown spectacle.
It doesn't match with your image. You can't go changing it now.
Image. Right. Sopping wet denim on the side of the highway in a podunk town. Orbison's probably getting a foot massage and about to play Carnegie Hall.
Think of it like this,
says Waylon.
Cowboy goes to the Pacific Northwest and falls in love. There's a story. There's a song. Nothing Oklahoma about it.
Woody's from Oklahoma?
Uh-huh. You're not Woody. Yet. And look, I know you've been working on the next album, and yeah, you've got a number one hit now, platinum record, but that's now. You've got to play the long game here, Keith. What's it been, a year and change? Dylan's already come out with an album this year with two others on the way. The Beatles have Hard Day's Night flying off the shelves, and it's also a motion picture. Sam Cooke, The Stones, Beach Boys, they're cranking stuff out. And no one's suggesting you didn't knock Elvis out of his number one spot on the charts. He's probably still shaking in his little blue shoes.
He doesn't even know who I am.
Sure he does. So does everyone else. But people are going to forget the words to Love Me Like That pretty quickly in this market. People are going to forget Tex Bartlett in this market. All I'm saying is if you work with this Oregon Coast Tourism Bureau, or whatever the fuck these assholes are called, and if you make this song a hit, we can push the record company off another year. Two, give you some leeway. I can help you, buddy. But you gotta help me first.
But they want me to write an advertisement, Keith says in a hushed tone in case anyone should hear him. A pelican lands on the wall too close for comfort. What kind of batshit animals they got out here? Keith turns away and tucks into the payphone tighter. You agree with these notes, Waylon? They want me to literally say flora and fauna?
They're worried about being too specific and leaving something out.
But they also list different Indian tribes.
Well, those are also the names of towns, so they thought it killed two birds with one stone.
The pelican ruffles his dirty feathers and flies away. Keith about jumps over the wall, thank the Lord he's holding the phone. What in the holy Jesus Christ? He kicks his guitar case with his weathered boot. They ain't my words, Waylon.
Of course they are. They're just their words too, I guess. You mix them in, you sing them, you play some chords. They're yours. It's not like you're making a deal with the devil here.
Robert Johnson made a deal with the devil. Know what he got? To be an amazing guitarist. So what do I get? A coupon for free fish and chips?
That'll be what you're paid in if you don't write this song. You'll be back to playing bars and clubs outside of Watonga. You want that?
And a bar in Loveless is much better? No, but...
Okay, then it's settled. Take the notes, spin some gold. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Keith leans on the wall. 50 feet ain't that high to jump, right? He could do a perfect swan dive. Maybe he'd go so fast time would turn backwards. The tide starts to wash out and he sees what look like severed tree stumps littered in the sand. He plays connect the dots as potential lyrics swirl in his head. Something about Lewis and Clark? They were the first ones out here, Keith reckons from history class. Did Horace Greeley tell them to come out here, or was he later? Go west, young man. Keith wishes there was further west to go, but this is it. And he still found nothing. Excuse me, sir? A naive voice beckons him from his depression. Keith turns to face a skinny young girl in a garage sale raincoat with a flowery skirt poking out the bottom like the doilies under his mother's fine china. She shifts from heels to toes and her pupils are buoyed by the blue in her eyes. Yeah?
Sorry, but are you, well, are you Tex Bartlett?
Keith pats his jacket for a pack of smokes and a lighter. As he finds them, he contemplates how to answer that question. His damp dishwater hair blows in Loveless wind. The haircut they made him get, the angled sideburns that tested well, the cheekbones he was born with that weren't his anymore. all of it copyright Tex Bartlett and Columbia Records. The one and the same, he says as breath turns into cigarette smoke, turns into fog, turns into clouds, turns into frigid white emptiness.
Dad, Sally, Mom, see, I knew it!
The girl jumps and points like he's a penguin at the zoo.
I knew it was you. I love your music, Tex.
Been a while since he heard that. It feels kind of good still. As Keith smiles, his teeth put a kink in his cigarette. That a fact? All the way out here in Oregon?
Well, we're from Lubbock.
Figures. He detected a tinge of Texas that made him want to scrape his taste buds.
Out here visiting, actually. On a road trip. This is my mom, Martha. My dad, James. My sister, Sally.
The family gathers and their dopey smiles burn like a prairie fire in this desolate excuse for a June afternoon.
Just bought me a new Ford Galaxy, says Dad James.
His taut suspenders curve on either side of his belly to connect to his trousers. Looks like a guy Pop would trip on his way into the bar and beat the living piss out of.
The red one parked right over there? You'd love it, Mr. Bartlett.
Why would he love it? Oh, yeah, because he's Americana incarnate. Baseball and hot rods and roping Broncos.
Yep, she's a beaut, all right.
Keith hates cars. Spent way too much time on tour buses and way too much time handing Pop tools as his old man yelled at him from under the chassis of some junk or another, thinking, what if I kicked the side of this piece of crap just hard enough? Would it fall off the jack and crush him to death? But his thoughts were always drowned out by another muffled yell for a torque wrench or axle grease or whatever else you use to fix cars. The girl still swoons over Keith. James puts a hand on her petite shoulder.
Janet here has been singing your song the whole way across the country. Love me like that, and I'll love you like this. You might have a backup singer on your hands.
The family laughs in unison except Janet.
Dad!
What? I'm just saying.
You're embarrassing her, honey.
No, I ain't.
Well, you're taking up Mr. Bartlett's time.
Nah, Keith waves off the niceties like a good southern boy.
All I got is time, it seems.
What brings you all the way out here?
Says Sister Sally. Janet's upset she didn't think of this exceptional interview question. Work. It was work. It was no longer art. Art met commerce, and commerce choked her to death with his sandpaper hands.
You must love traveling, though.
Janet steps out to the front of the pack, brimming with enthusiasm.
Get to see so many places of our grand country.
Oh, I reckon you're right,
Keith answers monotonously. The cigarette smoke is more expressive. Janet's eyebrows dip like they're cables holding up a wobbly bridge.
There's a lot to see way out past the Mississippi, eh?
Adds James.
You better believe it,
he says, trying so, so hard to match the man's hard-on for America.
Mississippi don't know what it's missing.
Keith forces his eyes to stare straight ahead instead of rolling. He pats the man on his chubby, wet shoulder and picks up his guitar case. He shakes Martha's dainty housewife hand, as well as Sally's, and gives Janet's chin a loving squeeze between his thumb and forefinger. She almost melts into a puddle, and Keith is glad she doesn't, because it's already too dang wet on the sidewalk. You folks take care now.
Bye, Mr. Bartlett,
they sing in unison. Sally starts making kissy faces at Janet and imitating her, chasing her in the street while her parents usher them back to safety. Keith crosses to the narrow wood-paneled building with peeling pale blue paint. Horton's Good Beer and Music is sandwiched between a more substantial brick building home to the Anchor Bar and Grill and a dirty stucco building whose only patron must be nostalgia. Keith opens the door to Horton's and his eyes need to adjust to the austere darkness settling over every table and booth. A venue. He almost misses the stage but spots it way in the back at the end of the bar. A flickering neon sign, live music tonight, hangs cockeyed as its cursive letters drip like his grandmother's saggy skin. Two old-timers playing backgammon sit at a booth by the large window. The blue light makes them look like ravaged bodies recently exhumed from a shipwreck. They take turns making moves and slurping beer foam from their mustaches. A short, muscular woman wipes down the bar with a dirty rag, dark red skin like charred steak. Nautical tattoos snake around her arms, black, faded, and bleeding like papers left out in the rain. She wears makeup, maybe, unless that's just how her face looks. A long braided ponytail drapes over her right shoulder, black with streaks of gray.
You playing tonight?
She croaks, mighty less infatuated than the family out front. Keith does a quick audit of the space. No chalkboard with his name, no sign, no poster. Just a typical, well, whatever day it is, who knows.
Yep,
says Keith as he raises his guitar case to some kind of proof.
Tex. Tex Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't miss a beat and points with a jerk of her head. You can throw your stuff over there.
Keith steps gingerly across the uneven floors. They list and sway like the inside of an old ship. The acoustics in this place reverberate and dampen almost simultaneously. A dusty crystal chandelier swings near the stage and radiates heat like an Oklahoma summer. Or a Texas one, if he's on the clock. The stage is about a foot off the floor, a black pedestal for antiques and oddities, castaways and has-beens. He drags a three-legged stool from the corner to the center. Its gracefully turned wooden legs stand hobbled and chipped. They had a stool like this in his bedroom. Mom said she nursed him on it when he was a baby. Pop threw it against the wall and smashed into a million pieces when she left.
She's probably out in Kansas or Ohio now making this kind of shit with her cult.
Keith shivered under his cowboy blanket.
What's a cult, Pop?
Pop spat, kicked the shards of stool.
Shakers, Christianity, religion, anything that ain't this family, that fucking community your mother gone and run off to. I'll tell you, God damn it, Josie, God fucking shit.
But she's coming back, right?
Pop paced like a tornado in a cornfield.
And she leaves me with this fucking kid. I provided for her, did everything. Let her go to that goddamn church every Sunday. No, Keith, no, she ain't coming back.
Keith wrung his hands together under the blanket, creating little dunes for the cowboys to ride their painted ponies over.
But, he whispered, thinking, it's my fault. If I hadn't wanted to play guitar in church choir, she wouldn't have been there so much, and she wouldn't have met Catherine May, and she wouldn't have heard about Shakers.
Pop grabbed the old harmony from its stand in the corner. Faded sunburst wood, scratched white pickguard, its whiskery strings uncut and kinked like a stray cat. Pop strangled the neck and pointed it ferociously at Keith.
And no more music, he growled. You hear me? None of that churchy bullshit. You want a hobby? You talk to me. Hobbies are things that can make us money.
He smashed the guitar against the wall. Strings snapped in excruciating wails. Songs sucked out of its hollow body like ghosts in the ether the day the music died. Keith flips open the brass clasps of his guitar case as nobody pays much attention around the bar. Sunburst wood, bright white pickguard. The closest thing to the original, or what he remembers the original to be. He quietly strokes the strings and shuts the case. His stomach gurgles and his throat is dry. He gingerly steps off the stage and approaches the bar. The woman pays him no mind because he doesn't deserve any.
Ma'am? Beg your pardon. Excuse me.
She just keeps on counting cash. Keith takes a shy step forward, thinking, she didn't hear me. Maybe I'm a ghost. Maybe that's a good thing, though. She barks before his boot hits the floor.
I hear you. Spit it out.
Oh, my apologies. See, I've been traveling for a right spell, and my manager said he spoke to the owner and that I'd be getting a meal each night.
She stops counting the cash and stares blankly. She has no pupils, only cobalt marbles like a shark. Keith continues.
My manager, Waylon Klein, he's the one who set up these shows.
A meal?
Honey, we don't do meals here unless you're on a liquid diet.
Keith chuckles and scratches his stubble. His sharp sideburns are beginning to fade into a beard like overgrown farmland.
Heh. Well, if it's all the same to you and you'll oblige, I'll take what you're offering.
She doesn't blink. She doesn't even need to look at her hands to grab an unmarked whiskey bottle that's half full and dusty highball glass that a goldfish would think was an igloo. The glugs percolate in Keith's throat. She slides the glass over, grabs a lukewarm tall boy, cracks it open, and slides it over too. Keith nods simply. Tex would tip his 10-gallon hat, but it was mysteriously lost in transit. Ain't that a shame? Keith has an easy time finding an open table. The little circular one next to the stage with a wad of soggy napkins holding up one side and nondescript crumbs on the surface, even though they don't serve food here. Keith leans across the stage to his satchel and grabs a tattered little notebook and a pencil nub. As he swishes the swill in and out of his teeth, feeling the sting in his gums and canker sores, he flips through the blank ruled pages. Album number 2, coming along great. He starts scribbling a spiral. Sometimes it helps him think. Not all the time. Not this time. He clicks the aluminum can between his fingers in time to some unknown hit single, topping the charts from the bottom of a glass. The door between the bar and the stage swings wider than should allow for the petite black-haired Missy who walks through it. Skinny and precocious, the girl walks in a skip and her braids bounce like two horsetails in the wind. Her beige plaid dress looks unseasonably summery. The old curmudgeons across the bar just about have to squint when they look at this peppy ball of sunshine. She pulls up a chair and plops down next to Keith like they're old pals. Crayons roll across the table, the most colorful things Keith has seen in Loveless. Want to see a picture I'm drawing? Her voice is saccharine yet regal in a way. Knowing, prescient, like a young June Carter.
I don't see why not, says Keith, draining his tall boy.
She slides the page toward him, and Keith holds it to the light. Chandelier sparkles dance across a big gray blob with blue squiggles around it. Keith takes a drag and stubs his cigarette in the ashtray. Got a little Rembrandt here, eh? It's a whale, she says through a grin. His name is Suuku. Keith follows the blob's edges, stopping at two hovering yellow dots on what must be the head. The dots stare into his soul. What? Suuku. He swims around in the ghost forest. He's a god. Keith returns the picture to the girl, leans back in the creaky chair, and swings a leg against the table like he's mounting a trusty steed. That's so. He wouldn't happen to be the god of record sales, would he? The girl giggles and draws some more blue in the corners. Then she shrugs her shoulders in that way that kids do, unaffected by the gravity of what she's saying. He's kind of like a tricky guy, and wanders around and stuff. Keith ponders this for a spell, sees Sunday church service, mom pleasantly listening to his playing, mom pleasantly walking out the front door forever. Your god is a whale, he says and clicks his tongue. You know where I come from? God is a giant bearded fellow wearing a big white robe. So, who's crazier, right? She giggles again, this time filling in the yellow even more prominently. The wax builds to a high sheen on the flat page. Nancy, barks the bartender. She slaps the rag on the counter. Nancy, get over here. You can't always be bothering the customers like that. She ain't bothering, ma'am. He's a customer now? Sure she is. Nancy, I told you to go finish your homework, remember? Then you can go play with Lewis at the dock. But I don't want you in here. Yes, Mommy. Nancy hangs her head, gathers her crayons and picture, then sulks away. Bye, mister. Take care, girlie. Keith finishes a last sip of whiskey and dust. He grabs the glass and then ambles up to the counter. Your daughter, I take it? What gave it away? Because we're the only two people for miles that don't have complexions like we just came in from a snowstorm? Keith chuckles groggily. Something like that. Say, Waylon mentioned you had a room I could crash in, but something tells me I shouldn't be presumptuous about something like that. You'd be right. She grabs the glass, doesn't wash it, crushes the can and tosses it in a bin Keith can't see. There are rooms upstairs. Place used to be a swanky hotel, in fact. They shot a movie here once, but they're all taken. So if you want a room, she holds up her arms. A fading naked lady sprawls along her right bicep while a pirate ship sails the leathery skin of her left. You're looking at it. You can sleep on the stage if you want. You already put your stuff there, so that's about as homey as it'll get. You know, if I closed my eyes and he told me this was the Ritz-Carlton, I wouldn't know the difference. She doesn't laugh. Keith doesn't either. What time you want me to play? Once it gets dark, people will show up. Nothing else to do. Keith squints toward the door. Gets darker than this? I don't think I've ever gone this long without seeing the sun. She cracks another tall boy open and slides it to him. Then she tosses him a yellow can of peanuts. Dermot's. He's never even heard of the brand. Only the finest and loveless, apparently. Keith smiles and pops the aluminum seal. He smells the salty honey whiffs, thinking, I knew she was holding that on me. You should see it in the winter, she says. I think one day is enough for old Tex. Keith pops a handful of peanuts in his mouth and wipes salt and oil on his jacket. It's seen worse. For the next few hours, Keith sits on the stage on the turned wood stool, blank notebook on his thigh, pencil nub in his hand. The thing ain't getting any blanker. Maybe he could sell it as a brand new one for some money if he needs. He looks across the bar to the front picture window, and here he thought pictures were worth 1,000 words. He can't even write one of them. He used to sit looking out his bedroom window for hours. Imagine the moment Mom would come skipping up the gravel drive, up the sloped and splintered porch with the broken swing, through the front door that warped in the humidity, up the stairs remembering to mind the funny one, to his room. And he'd be waiting for her. All those days writing songs in his head, holding the broken guitar he stashed under his bed without Pop knowing, silently fingering the chords, until he saved up enough money to leave without a word, just like her. Only he wouldn't be going to find Jesus. He'd be looking for her. He'd get so famous that no matter where she was, she'd have to hear about it. And then one day he'd look out from the bright lights of the stage into the audience and she'd be there, looking right back, singing along because she knew the words because she always did. The crystal chandelier is a dim winter moon on a fake summer evening. The rumble of loveless locals rustles like the waves outside. The bartender cracks cans and pours stiff and neat. If someone asked for a drink on the rock, she'd probably kindly point them across the road to the ocean and tell them to jump. Keith finds two microphones tucked under the stage like frightened refugees and plugs them into an ancient PA system. Surprisingly, they work. Everyone realizes they work, too, when a shrill squeal silences all conversation at once. Keith laughs and adjusts the mic stands. He sits on the stool and grabs his guitar, then leans into the silver orb.
Howdy, folks. I'm Tex Bartlett. How y'all doing tonight?
An errant cough echoes around the hazy room. Nice to know they're excited, at least.
So, I came all the way from, Texas to play some tunes tonight. Is it always like this out here, or did I come on an off day?
Nope,
says a curt voice.
Nope, what?
It's always like this.
Gotcha. Heath scratches his head with a strumming hand.
Well, it ain't like this where I come from. I call myself a fish out of water, but I hate those damn things, so I'll shirk the comparison for now.
Silence. Another cough. Maybe they need a lozenge. But as of now, Keith is getting paid in peanuts.
So, well, you know, I figured I'd start with some new stuff I've been working on.
They'd be in stitches if they knew that was a joke. Keith leans over and tosses the empty notebook in his open guitar case like a cheap tip for a street musician. Tip being, don't quit your day job. Keith looks around the dark room at a whole lot of nobody. A voice calls from the back.
Love me like that.
Beg your pardon,
says Keith, squinting in vain.
Gotta speak up. You folks are downright raucous in here.
Is that the wind he hears? From outside and across the world?
We want to hear Love Me Like That.
Keith absentmindedly detunes and retunes the E string. E flat, D, C sharp, D, E flat, E. He chews his lip and scrapes its scuff on the stage with his boot. He hangs a grin on his face that suspends in a catenary from his sullen eyes.
Only the hits for you folks, huh?
He sighs and squeezes the sweaty pick. The song that made him famous. Made him Tex Bartlett. A song every girl wanted to be about her and made every guy want the girl it was about. Nobody knew it wasn't about that at all. The lazy lead-in to the song is a fainting dance to a heavy E major. He's surprised nobody's ever made the comparison to Buddy Holly, or that he ripped it off That'll Be the Day. Maybe if Keith would have died in a fiery crash, he would stay famous and not be playing at a bar in Loveless, Oregon. Maybe. He keeps his smile as he starts the rockabilly intro.
Always making kissy faces, and I don't know why. You give him love so tenderly, and he barely bats an eye. I tell you what I'd do, babe, if only you were mine. I'd sweep you off your feet each day and sing you lullabies. I could be here for you, I could be here for you. I'd tell you what I could do, I'd tell you what I could do. I could love you like this.
The stutter stops at the last line of the chorus. Keith's mind goes blank. I could love you like this, and how many times has he played this tune? It's a number one hit. He's played it at Madison Square Garden and on Ed Sullivan. It always flows through him like an Oklahoma summer wind, because it's not what everyone thinks it's about. It's about a boy seeing his mother, the only person he loves in the world, choose something else over him. He sees her loving something with such conviction, such devotion. He could love her just the same if only she'd come back. If only. Keith searches the crowd, in the blackness, in the loveless air. She's not there. I could love you like this, he mouths, his pick hovering over the strings like a fishing lure. I could love you like this.
If you love me like that.
A few people bark in speckled disharmony. Keith jolts to attention, sweat on his brow. The guitar case falls shut and he almost topples off the stool. He smiles nervously and winks. A little audience participation never hurts. He strikes the next chord.
If you love me like that.
He finishes the song. He stammers through some others. A couple B-sides off the singles. Tells everyone he'll be here all weekend. Not like they have anywhere else to be. Not like they have a choice. Neither does he. At the end of the night, the lights come on, but it doesn't do much. Keith sets his guitar in the case and moves the mics and stool. He tries valiantly to make the stage comfortable. It's not comfortable. The bartender completes what she deems as acceptable cleaning and says she'll be back tomorrow. She locks the door. She doesn't mention the forgotten words, the less-than-perfect show. She probably didn't even hear. Tuned it out. Keith waves goodnight, but she's already gone. He sits on the edge of the stage with the blank notebook and his pencil. All the chairs are still turned toward him, spaced by wobbly tables like he's putting on a show for ghosts. He decides to take a break from the next album and focus on the updates to the Tourism Bureau song. It's just a bunch of mindless fluff about Oregon. How hard could it be? He writes a line. Then two. Then three. Again, thinking, come on, how hard could this be? He expects that to be rhetorical and that it actually is hard. But he keeps writing, piecing together verses here and there. Lewis and Clark, Tillamook and Coos, Flora and Fauna. It's beautifully Pollyanna, instantaneously meaningless. And how come it is so dang easy?
He rips the page out, crumples it, and tosses it on the floor. Maybe that was just a little writing exercise. Now he can get to his real work. Nope, see, now there's another good line for the organ song. Past them old Rockies in the Great Salt Lake. The ditty writes itself. He tears out the page, crumples it, and tosses it with the other. What was that idea he had earlier this week, earlier this month, about a rodeo clown who wanted to be a cowboy? That could be good. Keith can't think of anything. Can't hear the chords as crisply as the organ tune jangling in his ears. He shakes it off. What about a girl who's fixing to get asked to the dance by the guy of her dreams? He thinks of another line for the organ tune. His low growl swells into a slur of expletives. What in the whale god Jesus Christ? He chucks the book across the room and rubs his temples with salty, peanutty fingers. That's enough creativity for tonight. Once he gets some shut-eye, new ideas will come. They will. They've got to. The same crowd ambles into the bar the next night. About the same time, too. Maybe it's still yesterday. Even though Keith is certain these folks are the same folks from last night, he can't pick a single one out from the crowd. They're indiscernible in their identicality. Probably a lot of the same clothes, too. Maybe they swap amongst themselves. He's playing an encore separated by a day that seems as though it were separated by a lifetime. He makes the same jokes. They ignore them in the same way. He made a point to rehearse a bit during the day, though. Not actually playing the songs, just running through them in his head, every word, every syllable. He even studied the liner notes of his own record. This is what it's come to, he thought over his quarter peanut can lunch, paging through the album booklet tucked neatly into the sleeve of the one too many LPs he brought to sell. As he sat reading, Nancy sat at a safe enough distance away from him so that her mom wouldn't yell at her. She was coloring on more old paper, and every now and then she'd steal a glance his way. Was she drawing the same picture? Did she wear that dress yesterday? He tried not to concern himself with the details of this place. Keith read as he ran his fingers in concentric circles around the grooves of the vinyl, as if he could distinctly discern which groove aligned with which lyric or note. Wishing for Weekends, the A-side opener. Texas Queen, the up-tempo waltz. Travelin' to Love You, the Elvis-tinged ballad. Easy Honey, the big bopper wannabe. And, of course, Love Me Like That, the A-side closer. His magnum opus that he'd played so many times he didn't have to think about, which is probably why he forgot the words. He held the album cover at arm's length and watched the guy people thought he was watch him right back. The photo is Tex Bartlett in full suede and leather plus a cowboy hat, holding his guitar mid-stride across a night-lit desert road. Although his body is turned sideways, his head faces the camera. Around him are two orbs of yellow headlights descending upon him to send him into oblivion. "You want the cover of your debut record to be your untimely death?" said Waylon. "It's not my death," he replied. "It's a metaphor. A man unstuck in time. A cowboy crosses the road. He don't look both ways, does he?" Waylon just shook his head. He said he'd have to talk to the record company about it since it was pretty racy. That was when Keith, or Tex, had some sway with the big boys. When his single topped the charts and they wanted more. Hungry cows in the wide green pastures of Keith's transcendent creativity. Now the field was raised and barren. He looked beyond the crossing cowboy to the two yellow eyes, dismantling his being. When he closes his eyes on stage, he can see them, hear the whir of the engine and tread on the tires. He keeps missing the chord changes, keeps stammering over bridges like he's walking a tightrope. Did he miss a whole verse of Couldn't Be Truer Than True Love? And why do lyrics about organ keep squirming their way into his brain? He doesn't want to think about Rockaway, Loveless, or Newport, pines, cedars, firs, and oak trees. He just wants his songs back. Anyway, he shouldn't be thinking about any of this in the middle of another song. Not this song.
I could be here for you, I could be here for you. I'll tell you what I could do, I'll tell you what I could do. I could love you like this.
He forgets the last line. Again. No, no, not again, please. What's that damn line? All he can see when he closes his eyes are two yellow circles. All he can think is, I'm going to the Oregon coast. Why is this happening to him? He feels his pick snap between his fingers.
If you love me like that,
the guy in the back calls out between two swigs of stale beers. Right, right. That's it.
If you love me like that,
he strums with the backs of his fingernails in a bewildered whirl to finish the song. There. It's done. Over. Finally. Keith's in a cold sweat.
Thanks, folks. I've got one more show tomorrow night. I guess you know where to find me.
The crowd leaves, trying to comprehend this perpetually decaying performance by a madman. They'll be back, though. The bartender still remains unfazed by Keith's mania. She'll obviously be back, too. You can set your watch to her apathy. The deadbolt clicks, and Keith settles into his tomb for the night. He reviews the liner notes again, studying every lyric, tries to avoid the turgid stare of his alter ego. He rummages through the back office and finds a filthy console record player. Its chipped brown veneers look like half of the teeth he's seen on the regulars. He drags it to the stage and plugs the old girl in. Still fires up, even if it's not the glory days. Keith knows the feeling. He lays his record on the turntable and watches the needle guide itself to the first groove, the sweet sound of vinyl white noise. There's nothing else like it in the world. The warm timbre of his own voice and the bright oak of his guitar glide their way through the tired speakers and bring them to life. The chandelier shines a bit brighter. That's how he's supposed to sound. Right there. He sits on the stool watching a room full of empty chairs pantomiming his own guitar strums. Keith opens his mouth to sing along, but nothing comes out. The words were here on the tip of his tongue, but it's like he's listening to a song he's never heard. He restarts the first track, waits for the first verse. He's off. Misses the cue. Doesn't know the first word. He skips to Love Me Like That. As the lead-in hums, Keith leaps off the stool and grabs the record booklet. That's what he'll do. Read along and sing. He knows the song. It's his song. It's her song.
I could love you like this.
He's reading the damn line on the page. He can't get it out. If you love me like that, it's right there. Keith slams his hand on the record and scratches it backwards. The chorus starts again. Come on. You know the words to your own song, don't you?
I could love you like this.
He scratches it back again. Keith scratches it back again, and again, and again. He can't get the words out. He starts forgetting more and more. And in place of every word is another lyric about this godforsaken Oregon coast.
From the Pacific Ocean waves to the pristine sand.
What in the hell does that even mean? It's like tar on his tongue. The vinyl wobbles like a frail flying saucer, becoming amelodious and distorted. It's spinning more backwards than forwards, making a dampened dirge, a shambling corpse of a song. Keith is destroying himself with every turn. He rips the record from the console and the needle breaks. He chucks the black disc across the room and it shatters into as many pieces as Mom's old stool. It's quiet. But he can't stand the quiet. Quiet is for young Keith, hiding in his closet, holding his ears, trying to write songs in his head, trying to hear the music when he couldn't play it. He flips on the radio and finds a station.
All right, folks, top of the hour here.
Keith sighs and melts into his stool. The man's flaunting baritone lulls Keith into relaxation, but static creeps into his chipper diction. Keith reaches for the tuning knob and spins frustratedly, arbitrarily.
And let me tell you, we've got some fantastic music coming up.
Spins again.
You've probably heard these guys tearing up the airwave.
Now he's searching for nothing, skipping from station to station like sinking rocks in lava, trying to force the background music of his organ ditty out of his brain.
The lads from Liverpool, they call him.
Help, I need somebody. It wasn't too long ago when our folks were...
But the times, they are changing.
He keeps spinning the dial back and forth. Static, high-pitched whine, words, music. Static, high-pitched whine, words, music. The knurled metal pinches his fingertips as he grips tighter.
I die each time I hear this sound.
And I mean, I just love that song for my money.
I'm bound in love, wishing and hoping and thinking and praying.
Dang me, they ought to take a rope and hang me.
It's not working. The lyrics in his brain compete for dominance.
A place where everything lives in harmony. When you think it's given all it's got, there's a trick up its sleeve.
Keeps spinning, turns the volume up as high as it'll go. The knob snaps off, the stations keep changing. His eyes follow the silver indicator back and forth along black hash marks, faster and faster. Everything blends together. They're talking to him, trying to communicate with him. He crouches and hugs the console, presses his ear into one of the speakers. Closer, tighter. The mesh scratches his cheek and caresses his face.
Woman, would you weep for me?
So let's keep this set moving with
an important message.
Important.
Important.
For what? For one of our listeners. If you're out there, listen to this.
Listen
to this. You won't ever,
ever,
be anything. Not one.
Text Bartlett.
Text Bartlett.
Text Bartlett. Keith tumbles off the stage. As he falls, he grabs for anything and rips the cord out of the console. He lands with a thud in silence. His ears ring as errant sound dances on cheap liquor bottles. His heart beats to a miscalculated time signature. The chandelier flickers above him and the floor is stickier than it looks from the stage. He tries to steady his breathing as the kaleidoscopic images in each of his eyes slowly converge back into one. "Mister?" he hears a little voice. "Mister, are you okay?" Keith shoots to attention and spins around. Nancy is kneeling beside him with a handful of crayons. Keith sits up and hears the dusty glasses of the old cusses in the corner, the squeaky rag on the bar top. He shakes his head and leans against the stage. "Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm fine." "You just fell off the stage," says Nancy. "It was actually kind of funny." She grins with that same devil-may-care bashfulness. Keith blinks in the hazy bar glare. What are y'all doing here? I thought your ma closed up for the night." "Night? It's not nighttime yet. Almost." Frail rays of sunlight flicker through the window, disintegrating before they can even make it to a surface. Keith rubs his aching head. "How long was I out then?" Nancy giggles and stacks the crayons in between her fingers like the claws of a grizzly bear. "You're funny. You were just sitting on stage, fell off, and I came over here. It was like 5 seconds. "Nancy," barks the bartender. "I told you to leave him alone." "But Mom, I was helping him." "The hell you were. Get back over to your table." Nancy huffs and smiles one last time at Keith before returning to her table to commence her coloring. Keith audits the room and attempts to climb back on the stage. He notices the record player is gone. It's back in the supply closet, as dusty as it's ever been. Keith rubs his long, weary face and steps up to the bar. He drums the edge with tight fingers as he deliberates what he's even about to ask.
"Yeah, hey, am I playing tonight?"
The bartender raises her brow and scowls two dry, ruby lips.
"That's why you're here, right?"
Keith chuckles nervously.
"I reckon you're right. Damn, you're probably happy I only got one show left."
"After tonight?"
"No, I mean tonight. I thought tomorrow was your last show. Isn't that what your manager said?"
Keith scratches at a congealed blob on the bar.
"Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, well, ain't it tomorrow?"
He chuckles again. The bartender gruffly stops what she's doing and slams her hands down. "What is this, a fucking riddle?"
No, ma'am. No, I'm sorry. It's just that ain't my last show on Sunday?"
"Apparently. And that's tomorrow. Not soon enough, I'd say." She's serious. Keith looks over at the old cusses in the corner. They haven't known what day it was since before there were days to know. Nancy is coloring her whale picture, dangling her feet like a metronome.
"Sure," says Keith. "Yet, I was just, you know, just trying to make sure, that's all. Apologies."
She's already back to watering down liquor bottles and pickling eggs. Keith catches himself wobbling as he walks back to the stage. He played a show 2 days ago, played one yesterday. But if Sunday's tomorrow, that means yesterday is today? He reaches for his notebook, still in mint condition, no doubt, except for those couple of ripped pages. He thumbs through nonchalantly, then stops. It's not missing any pages. And on those pages that aren't missing are half a song's worth of Oregon Coast verses. Keith tries to page past them, but the paper sticks to his sweaty fingertips. Anyway, he's seen the lyrics now. They're inscribed on his skull. He can't unsee them. He chucks the notebook into his satchel and then crosses his arms, checking around to see if anyone reacted. Nope. He wants to hum a little ditty to calm himself down as he reassesses the situation and preps for his show, but there's only one song he can think of to hum. What Keith assumes is an hour or two later, all the locals begin shuffling into the bar. Keith sits on stage with a cigarette hanging from his teeth like a dead tree limb. An ashtray full of stubs blooms at his feet. Everyone still looks the same, because they are the same. Keith looks around, thinking, but are they the same as yesterday or the day before or today or tomorrow? He must have hit his head. He picks each of his 6 strings in succession as if they're wound around his brain and the picking will shake loose some lyrics. The stage lights blast on his face, and for a moment Keith stares directly into this dreary sun. Silhouettes find their seats, some just hover, lost and directionless. I'll get right into Love Me Like That, he decides. It's fresh on his mind. It's what the people want to hear. Keith breaks out the little intro riff to an A major, only that doesn't sound quite like an A major. And the tempo is all wrong. An easy melody, his right arm bobbing up and down in 4/4 time. He looks at his left hand, the staggering diagonal of a C major like a staircase to nowhere. Then an F, then back to a C. What is he playing? This isn't Love Me Like That. This doesn't sound like any of his rockabilly hits. Keith tries to blink away blinding stage lights as all the regulars he doesn't know watch him.
raise their beers to him. Now he's singing words. Words he's never sung, but words he knows so well. A whistle and a cheer in the chorus now. He feels his mouth form the words,
Oregon Coast,
and tries to stop it. He tries to shift from a C to an A, to start into Love Me Like That, to start anything else, to go down any path but the one he's on. But he can't stop. The crowd is happy, satiated, glowing, knowing, loving, gracious, wanting more, wanting him. Keith pries his hands off the guitar. Sunken coughs and sticky footsteps fill the void. Keith clears his throat and chuckles. Sorry, folks, he says. Wrong song. Wrong day, too. He lifts the pick and lets it fall. C major again. He shakes his head, sets up for an A major, strums. C major again. Oregon Coast. Shit. He sputters into the mic. Folks in the crowd look at one another. More than a few shoulders shrug. You know, says Keith, stumbling over his words. I'm sorry to do this, everyone. I just need to step outside right quick and get some air. Be right back. Promise. Keith sets his guitar on the stage and weaves through the messily arranged tables. The bartender keeps on serving drinks like she does every day. Any day. Keith pushes the front door like he's moving a boulder up a hill. The cigarette smoke lingers with him for a minute as he tries to shake off whatever just happened in there. He breathes fog and salt and everything looks blurry. Maybe he should look at the ocean. A never calmed him down before and he'd rather look at a rolling wheat field, but he's out of options. He can give Waylon a call while he's at it. Maybe it's tomorrow wherever he's at and he can give Keith some managerial insights. Keith wipes sweat from his brow and starts across the street, one foot striding wide in front of the other, walking across the perpetually damp cement, walking in the tall grass of an Oklahoma prairie. Mom walking up the front steps. He looks to his right and sees the road disappear, two golden guitar strings pulled tight. He sees his own shadow on the pavement get longer, pull away from him down the road. He looks to his left just in time to hear the blaring car horn and see two yellow orbs barrel through him. Then everything is silent. Bittersweet silence. No more music, no more Loveless, no more Oregon, no more Keith. But only for a second. Keith gasps and shoots up from the ground. He grabs his torso, his head, his legs to see if everything's intact. He's alive. How in the hell? Mister? He hears a little voice. Mister, are you okay? The dark road bleeds away and Keith looks around the bar from the shaky wooden floor. He shoots to attention and spins around. Nancy is kneeling beside him with a handful of crayons. Keith sits up and hears the dusty glasses of the old cusses in the corner, the squeaky rag on the bar top. He shakes his head and leans against the stage. His breath quickens as his eyes dart back and forth. What in the hell just happened to me? You just fell off the stage, says Nancy. It was actually kind of funny. She grins with that same devil-may-care bashfulness. Keith picks himself up and paces around, climbing on the stage, checking the back room, peering through the front window. Nancy follows in tow, holding her whale drawing and mimicking the creature swimming through the air, making whooshing sounds. Hey, he calls the bartender. Hey, yourself. Sorry, ma'am. Well, what's going on here? She shakes her head. Keith waits for a response, thinking, come on, lady, I bet you've been asked crazier shit than this. You're in a bar and you're going to play music? What is this, a fucking riddle? That's what you said yesterday. Huh? Yesterday. And then I played a show and I walked outside and I got run over. The woman in the old coots trade blank looks. You got run over? Yes! Keith is shouting now, pacing, slamming his palm on the front door to open it, and then pointing at the street in the afternoon light. Right there! See? He squints in the gray brightness. And it was nighttime! Bam! Run over! Dead as a doornail! I wonder if this whiskey's turned into vinegar, says the bartender, spinning the old bottle in her hands. I ain't drunk, says Keith. I'm telling you, I got hit by a car last night, now I'm here. But it ain't last night yet. How does he even go about explaining this? He presses on his eyeballs, thinking maybe he'll wake up and be dead, hopefully. Okay, she says, and slides a new tall boy toward him. Maybe you just stick to playing instead of solving mysteries. Far as I can tell, you need a bit of help with the music anyhow. The song. Keith runs to his notebook. The pages aren't ripped out. This time there's even more verses scrawled delicately, purposefully on the lines. No, this can't be right. He slams it down and stomps his foot. A curious sound emanates from the floor. He stomps again. Instead of a hard thud, he hears a metallic chime. Keith looks to his feet and sees a pair of shiny new cowboy boots, complete with golden spurs. His eyes widen in horror. He rips them off his feet and chucks them behind the stage. I don't think you want to be barefoot in this place, says the bartender. Keith ignores and continues to pace. If it was Saturday, then it was Saturday again, and now it's Saturday again. Does that mean it's Monday? It's gotta be Monday, right? Waylon should be at his office. He could call. That's what he'll do. He takes off toward the front door.
Now there's a man who looks like he knows where he's going,
mumbles a pile of gin-soaked rags posing as a human man. Pop used to say stuff like that. Just before Keith can extend his arms to push the door, it opens. The regulars begin to shuffle past him like a school of fish, not necessarily parting for him, but instead moving around the space he occupies. It's dark already. He turns to the stage as more bar patrons bump him. He's lifted off his feet, carried, floating back to where he came. He's deposited at the stage and shakily ascends to the stool. He looks around the room filled with nobody. The girl is gone. Her mother is back to pouring drinks and scowling.
You going to play or what?
Says a voice towards the back. Keith holds his arm in a makeshift brim and tries to make out any feature of any person. Maybe if he just plays a song, gives them what they want, things will get back to normal. That could work, won't it? What song did he start with today? That one hit. You know this, Keith. Love Me. Wait, is that right? No, it's got a different name. Starts on an A major, he's pretty certain. He grabs his guitar and starts playing a C major. What's the name of that song? That's the Way You Love Me? No, it's something different. Wait, is he singing right now?
With Rockaway Loveless Newport in between.
Christ almighty, he is singing. Not the song he wanted. But he's at a loss for any other song of his. Any other song in human history. Any other song but this one.
You gaze the prettiest sights anyone's ever seen.
The crowd nods their heads in unison. How do they know this song? Keith's never played this part. It's not recorded. He's not this musician. He doesn't want to be this musician. He can't breathe, but he's still singing. Finally, he yanks his hands away and his guitar rolls off his lap onto the stage floor. His strumming hand is still strumming idly. He uses his other to steady it and leans into the mic.
Sorry, folks. What I'm going to do is go outside.
He hurriedly weaves through the bewildered crowd. They've seen this all before. It's fine. Keith's arm still strums and he forces the front door open with his shoulder. He tries to breathe fresh air, but it's just fish and stale seaweed. What happened to good old cow manure? The pavement is cold and clammy on his bare feet. He needs to make that call, get out of this town. He starts walking across the street. Out of his left eye, he catches the glint of yellow headlights. He braces for impact. A terrible screech tumbles toward him and the car stops inches away. Keith opens his eyes and looks at the horrified driver, an old woman who barely peeks over the steering wheel. She cranks the squeaky window down.
I'm so sorry, dear. Are you okay? I didn't see you in the dark.
Keith shivers, trying to figure out how to reply to that question.
I guess, he says.
Then he has an idea.
Wait, back up.
Maybe this is supposed to happen. If he controls it, he could break the cycle.
I beg your pardon?
Ma'am, could you please back up? I'm going to walk over there, and you hit me, all right? You got it?
What? No, of course not.
Please, I promise. He's stuttering and trembling and strumming.
It's fine. I just need you to hit me going fast enough, so... No! Are you crazy?
Keith approaches her window with his palms raised like a prisoner.
Ma'am, back up. I need you to run over me.
She floors the gas and swerves around Keith. He shouts after her, but she disappears. Then another car crests the horizon, breaking through the evening blackness. As it speeds down the road, Keith breathes heavier and heavier, thinking, come on, you did it last night, this ain't any different. The car comes further into focus, its headlights distorted by diagonal rain. Keith kneels like he's at the starting line of a race, foaming through his teeth. The car is almost the main drag of town. He balls his hands into fists. The car keeps coming. Before it passes, Keith crosses the double yellow line. The headlights wash everything out in blind fury. The end is instantaneous, chaotic, catatonic. It's done. But only for a second. Keith gasps and shoots up from the ground. He grabs at his torso, his head, his legs to see if everything's intact. He's alive. How is he alive? Why in God's name is he alive? Mister? He hears a little voice.
What?
Keith barks at Nancy.
Mister, are you?
I'm fucking fine. Why is he fine? The dark road bleeds away and Keith looks around the bar from the dirty wooden floor. The old cusses in the corner and the bartender look at him uneasily. He shakes his head and leans against the stage. His breath quickens as his eyes dart back and forth.
You just fell off the stage, says Nancy. It was actually...
I know, says Keith with his face in his hands. It was actually kind of funny. Nancy grins with that same devil-may-care bashfulness. Your boots sparkle like my whale's eyes.
My... what?
Keith wiggles his toes, but they're trapped in stiff leather. He removes his hands from his face and sees the shiny cowboy boots on his feet. When he reaches to twirl one of the spurs, his movement is hindered by a band of suede fringe running up his sleeve.
What in the... are you messing with me?
Nancy edges backwards. Her eyes and the whale's are all he sees, wide, scared, and eerie.
Huh? She says quietly. You came in like that.
Nancy, calls her mother. Leave him alone.
Nancy skips away as Keith finds his footing against the stage. His notebook lays open, riddled with lyrics fuller than a barn dance on a Sunday night. But it ain't Sunday night. Not by a long shot. If he can just make it outside, he can go call Waylon. He can get out of Loveless. He walks stiffly to the door like an outlaw in a saloon. He forces himself through the heavy barrier into the gray afternoon. He runs as fast as a man in cowboy boots can run and grabs the old phone receiver. He finds change in any number of pockets and pelts the coins into the machine. They fall into oblivion one by one. There's no dial tone. Keith presses buttons, but no sounds come through. He pounds every button with his fist. Still nothing. No. No. This can't be happening. Keith curses and shouts, just like his old man. It was inevitable, he supposes. But right now there's no time to analyze or compare. Keith tugs on the phone and rips the cord out of the box. He slams the receiver down, kicks off his boots, and throws them into the ocean. He sinks to the sidewalk against the wet, rock wall and buries his head in his fancy arms. People step off the sidewalk or cross the street to avoid him. The suede of his ridiculous coat sops up rain like bread and soup. The Pacific Northwest Cowboy, they'll call him. Not if he has anything to say about it. When he lifts his head to wipe his tears, he sees a giant boat of a car speed down Highway 101. The family inside sings along to the radio.
Just bought me a new Ford Galaxy.
It's at the start of the main drag. It's his only option. He's got to try something. Keith stands and tenses his jaw. He can see the whites of their eyes, the bobbing heads of gleeful laughter. He says he's sorry. He hovers one foot over the curb. His spur revolves in the wind. The car draws closer. He takes a deep breath. The car is here. He steps off the sidewalk. They scream, though it's muffled through the windshield. He grits his teeth. They try to swerve. They can't. It's too late. Suede, leather, metal, and glass explode across the highway. It's done. He knows it's the end. But only for a second.
Mister, are you—
Motherfucking goddammit!
Keith strings curses together like a real pro now. Pop would be teary-eyed. He jumps onto the stage in his cowboy boots and fringed jacket, picks up the stool and hurls it against the wall. The bartender stops wiping, the geezers stop drinking.
Can somebody explain to me what the hell is happening?
Nobody responds.
No? Nothing? None of you backwater townies going to tell me anything? Where the fuck am I?
What are you going on about?
Says the bartender, throwing a rag over her shoulder.
And that stool's coming out of your pay. Keep my fucking pay, and tell me how to get out of this awful place.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, and you better keep your voice down because you're disturbing my customers.
Keith laughs menacingly.
Oh, am I? Well, in that case, let me help you out then.
He leaps from the stage, grabs his guitar case, and makes a break for the front door. He slams it open and props the heavy case to hold it ajar. The bartender, Nancy, the geezers, they all stand in the dim light of the bar looking at Keith, waiting for traffic. An engine roars and Keith cracks his knuckles.
Mister? Calls Nancy. Wait, what are you doing?
He ignores her. He tries to clear his mind, but all he can hear is a song about the Oregon coast. A car rumbles closer. He grits his teeth and growls. He dashes in front of the car. Screams bend into guitar strums that drift away into his subconscious. Keith jumps from the barroom floor. Nancy's leaning over him.
See?
He calls.
Did you see that? Did everyone see what just happened? Look at what just happened!
The bartender stops pouring a drink.
What are you babbling about?
You just fell off the stage. Yeah, watch your step. I'm busy over here.
What? No! I stepped in front of a car, squashed me dead, killed me right outside. I made all of you watch it happen.
Blank stares from everyone. Keith turns to Nancy, but she's gone. Regulars begin to shuffle in through the doors. The stage lights turn on. Keith is standing on the stage, guitar in hand. It scrapes against his giant, Texas-shaped brass belt buckle. He holds his hand to his brow to look through the crowd, but it bumps into an oversized cowboy hat. The crowd is cheering for him, chanting his name. Tex, Tex, Tex. He's already playing. No, no, please make it stop. C major to F major, back to C major.
Got me a guitar and I hit the road.
Said, Mama, I'm going to the Oregon coast.
You're singing along. It's like people used to with that, you know, that one song he had that was a hit. Love Me Something. But he can't think of those lyrics. Can't think of anything but this song. For a moment, he's happy, but it's an insidious happiness he feels burning his heart, ripping his ventricles. This can't be who he is. But this feels good to be who he is. He won't let this be who he is. He forces his hands away from the guitar, but they keep strumming, keep forming the chords. The crowd loves him, and he wants them to love him. He wants them to love Keith. Love him like that. Stop singing, he yells to the crowd through each lyric.
I'm going to the Oregon coast.
Stop singing. They don't even notice. They're all too drunk and happy.
Stop!
He leaps off the stage. He pushes through the crowd and rips the front door open. They all want to touch his 10-gallon hat. They want to rub his fringe between their fingers. They want to love him. They beat on the door, calling his name. He shuts the music inside. It's still playing. He's still singing. He flings the absurd hat down the road, sending it bouncing like a tumbleweed. He pulls at his hair, tries to focus on the waves, the breeze, the night air. He just needs to breathe, that's all. He can't because he's still singing. He clasps a hand over his mouth, thinking, step in front of this car, do it, now. But he doesn't. The yellow headlights pass and the car motor fades into the everlasting highway. It's no use. He runs across the street and grabs the phone. Dial tone pulses to the beat of this song. He forces it away, trying to dial Waylon's number. It still won't connect. Nothing will connect. He slams the receiver again and again and again, rips the cord out. The dial tone stops. Then he hears a faint acoustic rhythm. He looks at the dead phone in his right hand and slowly brings it to his ear. His own voice sings back.
Well, the mighty Mississippi don't...
Keith chucks the phone in the street and it's run over by a car.
Just bought me a new Ford Galaxy.
He hops onto the stone wall and looks at the waves crashing 50 feet below him. Black, churning blood. Maybe this is the way out. Maybe he'll find solace. Maybe he'll find Mom. Maybe he'll lose his voice with one last scream. His spurs spin in the breeze like two haunted windmills. He's never been up this high before. He doesn't even know how to swim. It's probably better that way. He extends his arms and feels his weight take him forward. It's refreshing for a second and total free fall, away from Loveless, away from everything. Before he hits the water, he opens his eyes. White-hot light burns his face. Keith feels himself begin to float in the ether until a gentle tug pulls at his molecules. A soft monotone chime turns into a strummed chord that slowly but surely lulls him awake. A rematerialization. He feels his arms moving. Keith opens his eyes and sees the white-hot light again as it slowly fades away and reveals a crowd of happy people singing along. To him. No. No. It was over. He was gone. He forces himself to stop playing, hangs his arms at his sides. He stares petrified into the crowd of people he just escaped from an eternity of seconds ago. Keith breathes into the mic, hyperventilating, laughing nervously.
Oregon Coast,
says someone in the back.
Oregon Coast,
says another. Keith's fingers press into the strings even though he didn't put them there. He starts strumming. People raise their dirty glasses. People are happy.
Oregon Coast.
Keith screams, but it's drowned out by the song. He throws the guitar against the wall. It smashes in a wooden sunburst. He pushes his way through the crowd, forces the front door open, steps outside, and shuts them all in. He breathes heavily, uncontrollably. He can't get the song out of his head. He can't think of any other song. There was never any other song. Headlights speed along the highway from the north. Keith darts across the street. The car passes behind him as he dives over the rock wall like no Oklahoma boy has ever done. But this swan dive is a thing of beauty. He hangs in the air, his cowboy hat drifting away. Keith closes his eyes, thinking, this is it, this is it, this is it. He prays that it is. Keith hits the water. There isn't even a splash, and even if there were, there'd be nobody around to see it. Silence. Coda. Oblivion. Then, he opens his eyes to the stage lights. The bar bleeds in and he can't make it stop. He can't make it all go away. He's not Tex Bartlett. He doesn't want to be the Pacific Northwest cowboy. But look at the crowd. They adore him. They want more of him. They want their song, their anthem. And he created it. He can feel his pearly white grin grow larger and larger in agony, stretching his cheeks and pulling at the corners of his eyes.
I'm going to the Oregon coast.
No! He smashes the guitar on the stage. He picks up the stool and throws it against the wall. The crowd is drenched in splintery confetti. Keith pushes his way through, knocking over men and women who talk
topple like liquor bottles. He barrels through the door, doesn't even take a breath. He just heads straight for the rock wall and leaps over the edge. This time it isn't pretty. It's a flailing cannonball, a plea for mercy, and a plea to the whale god or any other goddamn deity who will listen to just please, please, oh lord, please, make it stop. Before he hits the water, he opens his eyes. White hot light burns his face. The crowd cheers and sings along to the chorus. Keith strums and taps his foot. He feels the weight of the cowboy hat on his head, crushing his neck into his collarbone. He feels his notebook in his pocket, chock full of folksy lyrics. He curses through cloying, excruciating smiles. Stop! Cheering! Stop! They don't. They won't. Keith sprints off the stage. He plows through the crowd. On his way out the door, the bartender gives him an uncaring look. Nancy sits alone, coloring, unaffected. Outside, the payphone stands like a disheveled hitchhiker. He looks left and right as he runs across Highway 101. But there is no road. Only loveless and fog on either side. The sky is black and the stars are a shotgun blast through a barn door. Keith crouches into a faster sprint, watches the rock wall coming at him full force. He jumps, more dogged this time, with ferocious, savage purpose. The waves envelop rocks and tree stumps. He screams with everything he has as he falls, a bellowing war cry, 40, 30, 20 feet, a torpedo ready to explode on impact. Then, nothing. It's over. He feels the cold, salty ocean caress him and pull him further down. He keeps his eyes shut tight even when he can't, even when they aren't his eyes anymore and he isn't him anymore and he is gone. A taciturn calm washes over as he floats through the deep, vast nothing. In the frigid water, his body temperature raises to a tepid tingling. Soon, it's an easy warmth, like lying on a hay bale. The hay bale becomes a wool blanket, and the blanket is his mother's arms. She holds him tight against her breast, unabating in her love like that. I found you, sweetness. I came back. Keith pushes tighter against her until they are one unencumbered being. He can't let go. The warmth gets hotter, hotter still. The comforting blackness dulls to gray, which ignites, subtly at first, then to a pilot light in the back of the oven, then a piercing inferno. Everything is burning, yellow and white. Mom melts away. Keith feels his limbs again, his eyes, his soul. But it isn't his soul. It's something hauntingly, frighteningly different. The white slowly tears around his periphery like edges burning on parchment. He sees one person, then another through a hazy bar. Before long, he's seated on a stool, guitar on his lap, chandelier sparkling, ricocheting off dirty glasses. The room chatter fades to silence. Everyone watches him, all smiles. They're waiting. Waiting for him. Because they love him, the Pacific Northwest cowboy. They love Tex Bartlett. There's no one else to love. He is theirs, and they want to hear him play. And he wants them to want to hear him play. He slowly places his left hand on the neck in a C chord. That's the best he could come up with. Really? An uninspired, ubiquitous C major? He looks at the shape of his fingers, thinking, yes. Yes, it is. Because it doesn't need to be any better. They love you, Tex Bartlett. The words bubble in his throat like vomit. The crowd watches in anticipation. A whoop finds its way to center stage. People raise glasses. Keith raises his pick. He squeezes it hard, holds it for a moment with watery eyes and a wide smile. He tastes his tears as they melt into his gums. He knows that when it strikes that first string, he is no longer nothing anymore. He is no longer Keith Bartlett. He is something else. And he needs to be okay with that. And he needs to be okay with all that comes with it. He lets the pick fall and starts to strum. Thanks for listening to Loveless Oregon. If you want to learn more about the collection, go to elliottmatson.com/loveless.